Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Willow, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. I'm really excited because we're getting a chance to get an inside look at the creative process of making an album. And also, there's an opportunity for everyone here to actually participate and be part of that process. My guests tonight are my very good friends. They've been on several times in Sendio. And in studio tonight, I have Jim Stubblefield, Jean-Pierre Durand, and Lisa Carbe. And let me get the mics on for you. Welcome, everybody. It's really good to see you again.
Yeah, thanks, Jeff. Good to be here.
Thank you for having us, man.
And let me get the gain up for you guys. And what I want to do before I play... what I want to say is the album's still in process, so they're still tracking. Some of these clips that I'm going to play are not finished. There's extra guitar parts, extra sweetening to be done. So you're going to hear actually... part of the, you know, more of the raw, the early beginnings of some of the songs. So the arrangements are pretty elaborate of the cues I have and pretty extraordinary. And I think it's just a great, what I really like about Incendio a lot is each album, whether they're doing the group or they're doing as individuals, they're always pushing their boundaries. And this album definitely does that. But what I want to do is just start off and just jump in, whoever wants to jump in first, is what the hell are you doing? No, what the? Give me a little idea of the background and the concept of the album and where you think it should go and what you're trying to do musically, because it's obviously you're going beyond from what you've done before, and there's a lot of things happening, as you'll hear in some of the clips.
Well, as you say, we're always pushing our boundaries. So what we like to do is push our production chops. And basically, we're writing pop music. We're writing instrumental pop music, utilizing all things from all parts of the world. We're utilizing Latin, Middle Eastern, rock, everything, and just writing more of a pop CD.
Pop. Because you guys, how would you classify yourselves before? Was it more world fusion? Would that be the term? Or,
well, we call ourselves world guitar,
World guitar.
And that's really what we're doing again, but we're just utilizing things from different parts of the world.
and we are, there were retail labels that were put on, when we first started. We've been doing this for a while, and before it was Novo Flamenco or Nuevo Flamenco. We call it world guitar. It might evolve into something else. As far as my view of what happened, I think we wanted to write an album that was very kind of a little more pop, a little more accessible, but still respecting the melodies and the great playing. And I, in my mind at least, had the thought that I wanted it to be very up. But I think it's also a matter, Jim and Lisa can comment on this, it's a matter of respecting the creative impulse, because now it's not, you know, we'd envision like a more full dance album, or even like soul stuff, just like really, because it's an empty palette for you to do whatever on. But then it evolved, and everybody wrote stuff that kind of went in different directions, and then you kind of decide, how is this going to all pull together? And for us, the thing that always pulls it together is that it's nylon string guitar, you know? And hopefully the tones are consistent and sounds, the songs are framed in such a way that it makes everything a cohesive whole. And so I don't think we've dropped it. There were songs, at least from our part, I can't speak to Jim, but there were songs that Lise and I wrote that were not immediately in the circle, or they didn't move me, or they didn't move her, and they weren't quite there. And so there was kind of a self-editing thing that happened, at least for us. Did you have something like that? I mean, you know?
No.
I mean, I don't know how you came about your song, so.
I wrote a couple songs. You know, I've written so many Roombas in the last 20-something years. So one of the Roombas I wrote, I said, well, I want to just have it be a little different production-wise. Mm-hmm. So I was messing around with some synthesizers, MX4?
MX4.
MX4.
Well done, Motu.
So basically I did a rumba kind of rhythm, but then I put like this MX4, it's like a sequenced kind of, almost like a techno patch, and that immediately set the tone for that, and then I put like more of a kind of a dance groove, and then I sent the demo to those guys. And then they, you know, took it to the next level. And then I wrote a bolero. I've never written a bolero before. But I was listening to, when we were on tour years ago, we used to listen to a tango kind of fusion group called Goton Tribe. And they do these kind of loopy stuff. So it's tango, it's not bolero, but there was same sensibility. It was like, because I hadn't written anything in that genre. And so I explained in my notes, I said, hey, can we do this? So JP and Lisa added these really cool just like piano riffs and stuff to it, and it's got this thing that I'd never done before. So my whole thing was, whatever I brought to the table as a composer, I wanted to at least write something that was different than what I'd written. And it's hard, you know, when you've been writing instrumental music not only for Incendio's records, but you know, 6 solo albums.
Well, do
to
you,
like not repeat yourself,
right? But do you have a certain mindset when you write for Incendio? Because like, your last album was more, there was a lot of prog influences, and also too, your expanding of your musical vocabulary in terms of instruments. What I noticed in these, then these are just rough mixes. You're using electric guitars, but much more subtly than one would think. I mean, at least to me, it's in the background, but like, hey, yeah, he's kind of doing that in there. And so I'm curious for you, is that because your solo albums have gone a lot of different directions too, and then also you guys have been experimenting, but you've done as Carbe and Duran, but you've also done production, so you do a lot of different.
Well, that's it. You know, we've written probably over 20 CDs for production libraries and trance CDs and all sorts of things, and we integrate those things into the production music that we do, whether it's for Sonaton or whoever. And a lot of times we'll be writing for one of those companies and we go, oh no, we're keeping this song for Incendio.
Good idea.
You know, it's too good and we're keeping it for this. And then maybe we'll definitely tweak the production in a different way when we use it for Incendio. But a lot of times those platforms are sort of jumping off places for us to experiment and what we bring back to Incendio, mm-hmm. and adding loops and horns and synths and things like that.
Two very clear things that I wanted to mention, like for example, with Jim's stuff, he brings it to us and says, you know, let's experiment. What do you have in mind? And sometimes, like in the case of Poderosa, that was pretty fully formed. The only thing that I would say we uniformly did on all of Jim's is tweak the BPM up a little bit,
But for example, like on Poderosa, that was pretty fully formed the way it was. Whereas Blue Bolero went through some changes, and then I go, you know, or Lisa goes, what do you think? And it's, you know, it's like, that really didn't capture it, or that's really cool. In the case of the songs that he brought, that worked out, and we were able to move together pretty fast.
And, you know, it's fun. It's fun for me because when I do my solo albums, it kind of lives and dies by me, so I'll make my mistakes or whatever. Whereas when I work with the band, I really do tend to defer to those two. And it's fun to hear what they do. Like, because if I'm producing the Incendio stuff, then it's not, it's going to sound too much like my solo stuff. So by putting it into their kitchen, it guarantees that dividing line. Because I always think it's nice to have like two entities that they sound similar, but it has an Incendio sound to it. And
yeah.
JP and Lisa have been producing, for the most part, Incendio albums for almost 20 years. So I know if I write a tune and they're going to do something, they're going to surprise me that I wouldn't think of doing.
Right.
And that's the magic, I think, is like having that situation.
Yeah. You know? Well, that definitely Carbe Duran as a production entity, there is most producers, there's a sound. Alan Parsons, you can tell. You can tell by that. And there is though I have to admit, you get different sounds and the way you mix things in a terrain. But there's the thing I notice in terms, if I would analyze it, would be that the clarity and the pristineness of the instruments. You guys get a very clear sound. You can hear everything.
The touchstones there, I'd say, are Steely Dan and XTC and Peter Gabriel. Those are bands we all really, really love. You know, the So album and how groundbreaking that was. And, you know, now it's seeming like everything is so easy. You know, you can punch up a great drum sound or a great loop sound or whatever. So you have to make sure that your acoustic instruments at least match that level. I would say, and this is some of our listeners, especially the guitarists, might find this kind of funny, but this CD, it, for like one little detail, it's a return to stereo guitars, which is going to sound really odd. But for years, the Incendio mixes are so dense. There's so much going on that if you can be more pointillistic and just get a guitar here in this perspective and that perspective, it actually gave us more flexibility. And I think, you know, Jim has experimented with both on some of the stuff he did. So we've kind of gone back and forth, but this time it was a real commitment to say, I can only think of one song on the album where most of the acoustic guitars are in mono. And when I'm speaking of that, I'm speaking of lead guitars. Mm-hmm. Rhythm guitars are usually stereo pairs. Some So some are like two mono passes or whatever.
Yeah.
But like in this one, I just am not a, like for another example, I'm just not a fan of direct guitars on recordings. I just don't like the sound. I love
Especially guitars. With your guitars. Yeah. It's almost a crime to direct them because you have such beautiful guitars and they resonate, you know, give them some air.
But for electrics, it's cool.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But
there's some pretty cool, like, plugins.
Well, stuff. That's the thing. He was telling JP was telling me about all these plugins that he's been trying and stuff. And
For this one, we have some Godin guitar. We love Godin. We use them a lot live. They typically aren't on the albums because they're not, you know, true acoustic guitars. But they're mixed in the rhythms. Possibly for the first time, and maybe a little bit of Misterioso, but it's been real. And so it's a choice of texture. And I've actually got one tune where the Godin is hard left and the Strat is hard right. And then you kind of mix them together, and that creates the bed, and it's a very unique sound. That probably happens like in two tunes, I think.
It's kind of like I remember when I first heard Trevor Rabin. He does a thing on the second Yes album where he's playing his steel string acoustic, but he has it split out. So one part of the signal's going into the desk, and the other part of the signal's going into a distortion.
Mm-hmm.
And if you listen to like Lift Me Up and some of that stuff, he's playing a steel string guitar with really light gauge strings, like eights or nines on it. But he's processing half the signal through a distortion. And you can hear him. It's pretty cool. And also, like somebody said, AC/DC, Back in Black, the dunt. Da, da, da. They would double that with a grand piano.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, like, who would have thought? That's the grand pianos playing that.
Who'd have thunk it?
But, you know, that's part of the fun of production is what can you mix with something that makes it pop out and makes you go, wow, what is that sound? You know, it's not just a guitar, it's not just a piano, yeah, but it's mixing things, doubling, tripling a sound that makes it really
unique. You're talking about Bolero. Well, Ravel was the master of creating new tonalities by combining different instruments, emphasizing harmonics. And he'd have something play a tenth above another thing, and it changed the harmonic content and would make the sound a unique sound.
And, yeah, and when that piece was debuted, there was a riot in the streets, which is what we're shooting for. Yeah. So,
yes. Well, that was because of the form.
And one quick thing, like Trevor Rabin, I think that's a good example. Another one of the guitarists we love that I kept in mind when I was kind of playing around with some of the stuff on this. And I don't know, we did it to that level, but Eric Johnson, I'm pretty sure it's on Seven Worlds, the early album that wasn't released till much later. He has one piece on there where hard left is nylon, hard right is steel, and he plays the exact same thing with the same kind of pressure and expression and all that, and it's beautiful, and it's just very panoramic because you have two distinct
timbres.
And
didn't we do that on a track I sent you where there was steel doubling the nylon for arpeggios?
Yeah, we did that, right?
Yeah.
Because it gives it's funny because the steel string I have is really washy and bell-like, and it's more of a fingerstyle guitar. So on its own, it's almost too bell-like and chimey, but if you put it underneath the nylon, you just get those harmonics that sparkle above
the
nylon.
What kind of steel string?
It's a James Goodall.
James Goodall.
Yeah, handmade guitar out of Hawaii.
And then you EQ a lot of the low end out and let the nylon string carry more of the low end, and the combination is
or like
really
I think even bands like Aerosmith would do they do the same exact guitar part that's distorted with a clean sound.
Yeah.
And they layer it, and the clean sound would give the definition to the distortion.
Yeah.
You don't hear the clean, but you hear the definition.
Sessions all the time.
Absolutely.
You'd play dirty, and then you'd have they would run direct too, and then send it to the amp. Or, like you said, a lot of guys now are doubling it with an acoustic guitar to get that tinkly high end, to get those harmonics up there. It does add a different character, whether it's playing with a nylon string or whether it's a full-blown electric guitar. It is a...
Yeah, I think for my ears, what I do hear when you look back to your question about what's different about the record is that we're not pulling any punches with... Like, even our second album we didn't, you know, because our second album, we which is 2001, we did a lot of stuff. But because back then we were on a record label, and the record label wanted certain things. You know, I mean, do this. And we were like, okay, we could do this, but, you know, we did our own thing, of course. But this... We make the decision. We can do whatever we want, and that there's a huge amount of freedom with that. I mean, there's a song called Amazon River Hoedown or something.
Yeah.
It's got like a Telecaster solo, nylon string, and an accordion on it. And I don't think a record guy just 16 years ago would have let us do that song. But we can do whatever we want now. And that, to me, is the thing that I think about with this record, is that we're doing an all-original record, and we're not worrying about some third party saying, oh, well, you can't put that on there.
Yeah.
Because it's just going to go on Spotify and Pandora, and the public's going to decide if they
like it. Well, that's the thing.
That's a super important point, you know?
Yeah. No, well, let me go ahead and play Don't Explain.
Now, don't pretend.
Hmm?
Don't pretend. I may have screwed that up. I keep thinking like I've Ella on the brain.
As I said,
might have done the same thing I did. I was like, no, don't pretend. God.
Yeah, no, not Billie Holiday.
Don't pretend. Anyway, these again, these are rough mixes. They're not fully sweetened. There might be guitar parts that are still coming, but this is kind of mind blowing, and this is a big. Take a listen to this. This is a great song to play. At least what I'm hearing here, like at a party, if you're like, guess who this band is? Because I don't think I would ever think that you guys would do this, though you're musically capable of doing this. But this is very, very cool. And let me play it, and then we'll talk more what you're doing. Now, I bet everybody out there wasn't prepared for that. Tower of Incendio power.
Oh, I like that.
That was actually how Paco de Lucia started his career, doing more music like this, playing against type, doing soul and blues in Spain. Not a lot of people know that.
That's very cool. No, I love
that. Totally made that up for everybody.
Who did the brass arrangements?
Woody.
Me and Woody Mankowski, who is a friend that you just end up meeting great, talented people on the road. And Woody plays with our good friends in Rump Roller, the Rump Roller Trio and Quartet. It's a group that Kevin Stevens and James Aker are in, and Carrie Frank as well, who is playing B3 on that track. And Woody's been playing with them on and off for years, and we just hit it off and said, hey, here's a general outline, and he super punched it up. We brought in Ann King, who's a tremendous trumpeter and actually played on the very first album on Mysterioso. What did she play on Festival de Luces? And then between then, she's been with Rod Stewart and Yanni, I think, just about everybody. And then Kevin Hicks on trombone, who Woody brought it. And they just came to the house and nailed it. I mean, we went through several iterations, like, check this. Is this note cool? Is that cool? Then I go to the guys, you present it. They're like, that's good. And then they came over and just smoked
it.
So Woody, you guys charted it out.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because there's some great stings. And where the drums, where that break is with the drums, and they're hitting all those hits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Love that stuff. That stuff is great. And you're moving around a lot on that bass.
Yeah,
there's a lot of cool things that you're doing on there.
It's a fun piece to play live. We played it live for the first time
Saturday night.
Yeah, it was cool.
So that's part of the we've did a quick film of that show. Part of the reason obviously here is to do the Pledge Music Drive, and so we're going to be presenting some stuff very shortly to our pledgers on morphing that song to the live version, and showing people how we're playing it live. So, wow, it's busy right now.
One day, they will play that with the Tower Power Horn section. I predict that
we
will
are. We
that
are,
is so cool. That's a great horn arrangement.
And we are big fans. So, yeah. Thanks to you, oddly, once again, in the Tower of Power Direct.
Yes. I wouldn't mind playing it with the horn section that played it.
Yeah.
It'd be killer. I'd love to take them on the road with us.
Yeah, no. Yeah, that was an album, what he's talking about. It was a direct disc album, which was recorded right on the lathe, called Tower Power Direct. It was like a whole set, like a 20-minute set.
Mobile Fidelity or something?
Yeah, Mobile Fidelity.
Sheffield Labs. Sheffield Labs. And to all of the music geeks that are out there, that album is available on Amazon.com with the takes that were not used. So the other takes are on there now for any
Tower Power. Yeah, because if they made a mistake, they had to go back and cut it again. It was literally, there's a few people did, Lee Ritenour and Dave Grusin did stuff too. But you can get the that album, Tower Power Direct. It's now been remastered for CD, and it's killer. It's really.
So that always floats in the, but that definitely floated in the back of my mind. When
oh, those hits are great. I love that. The horn arrangements are just...
It's a good time to bring in, talk about Tim Curl, our drummer. He was going to be here this evening. He is a teacher at LA Music Academy in Pasadena, and he had a class that he had to do this evening, or he'd be here, and he just murdered the drum kit. It sounded great. And our friend Billy, we did the drums at his place.
Yeah, Billy Sullivan.
Billy Sullivan.
Mm-hmm. And now, before we go into there, I got a couple more clips to play. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit, because this is an interesting opportunity. Part of the thing that's happening now, which I'm seeing with other artists too, is they're setting up a funding system so that they can just to get their fans involved into the process where they help them fund the production of it. So what I'd like you to explain a little bit so people understand, because what you're hearing here with this last clip with all of those musicians on there, and then plus the hours spent writing the arrangements and also the recording. There's a lot of time being spent, whether Jim at his studio is running, he's writing. That's physical time creating. It's not just like, hey, let's go jam. Yeah. Okay, cool. But they have to understand, I think people need to understand how much work it is. And it costs. I mean, even if you're using your own studio, there's an expense to
time
it.
Is always money.
Yes.
Yeah. And we didn't always use our own studio for a number of things, right? Yeah. I mean, there, we went to third-party studios for the
B drums
and
the
B3.
The
and all the music, everybody in the horn section had to get paid.
You have to pay
everybody. Everybody has to get
paid.
So
there are expenses, yeah. and people, besides after the fact, after the hours spent mixing, the plugins, what you need, the updates to the plugins, the updates to the software, and then the mastering and all that. There's a whole process that costs money. And what I think is kind of cool now, like you were saying, you have no restraint. You're now have a vehicle to do what you really do creatively, what you want to do. And I think that with the Pledge Music, that show the support of your fans. It's important because they're the ones that love what you do. And I've sat in with you guys. I've seen you guys play live, and your fan base is one of the best fan bases in terms of people.
Lovely people.
Really nice people. Very loyal and super, super supportive.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so let's talk a little bit about how the Pledge Music thing is set up, what they can do. And the reason I have them here with some of these guitars is they're offering special things. Well, I'll let you just explain it.
Well, right in the world, there's a Kickstarter. There's a few others. You have to decide which platform you want to use. In our case, we looked at everything that was out there, and we decided we want to use Pledge Music. They had a great track record. We all did research on how they did it. And also, we took a little bit of time with it because in the last couple of years, and now you got Judas Priest using it, and didn't Aldi Meola also do it?
Aldi Meola, yeah. John Prine. I mean, people that I think are fine financially.
Yeah, yes.
And they're still doing, because I think what you're doing is you're basically saying, look, we're just asking you as the public to buy the record in advance because, you know, there's no record stores anymore. Really, there isn't.
No, I mean, there isn't.
You can go to a college town and there's a record store, but it's not like, you know, it's not ubiquitous. Like everywhere people would go to in. So we're just mm-hmm. saying, you know what? You're going to buy it anyway, so why don't you buy it in advance, and that'll help us get it done in an expeditious manner.
And the days of the promo guy somehow sticking in like cocaine and a limousine into the bill that the artist eventually has to pay back to the label are long gone. It's for artists like ourselves, if you want to be autonomous, if you want to be self-determined about the way you're going to move forward, you're going to find a way to fund your album. And so that's what we decided to do. We decided to develop premiums, and that's really more the purview of Lisa and Jim. They worked very hard to set up all of the, and this is very common to most pledges, but there were little tweaks like, you know, not only do we want to offer things, but, you know, what picture would go right with what premium, little things that upgrade your presentation. Mm-hmm. They were very sensitive to making sure all of that happened. And there are crowdfunding books and different advice. It really was something important to prepare. Before we started, we prepared a bunch of archival clips to be able to post to Facebook and Instagram, I'd say, and Twitter. It certainly brought my personal game up, you know, of interacting on, mm-hmm. on social mm-hmm. media. But, yeah, it was a big collective effort to kind of get it all ready to go and then launch it. We're kind of in the middle of it right now. And so we send out advisories constantly. We send out emails, and we describe the premiums, which include, as we said, lessons. They include these guitars that people can see on Facebook Live, the student model mid-70s Ramirez, Kenny Hill New World cutaway guitar, and Jim's got his Maldonado there. It's a real and a beautiful-sounding Maldonado. So those are the... those are the, you know, quote unquote sacrifices.
And we also dug through our archives, and I know I was talking to Lisa, like, how many posters do you have, you know? And because, you know, we're going through like 20 years of like, you know, like when we do albums, the record label would make promo posters. And I'd saved, you know, like the Misterioso one and the D.A. Noche one, and I'd save like 20, 30 of each. You know, so we have pledge levels where, you know, no matter what, even at the lowest pledge level, you get a digital key to basically get the record digitally.
I just ordered the album.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. And but then, you know, you go in another level and you get, like, say, the entire Incendio catalog on a USB stick, you know. And
I saw one. It's everything. All your solo stuff, all your on a USB.
Well, it's not. It's kind of selective, but it's still a lot of stuff. I mean, it's like hours and hours and hours of music, and then. You know, obviously, Lisa's father, who, and she'll talk about it, who was a animator for Disney, is, you know, incredible
stuff.
Yeah, I
saw that, the poster.
So, you know, there's even these cool things that you wouldn't otherwise be able to get.
Well, I'm sorry, but you can't have my Incendio pillow, which I ordered years ago
from Cafe Press.
Oh, yeah.
I have my Incendio pillow. Oh. Or you don't want my T-shirts. I've been wearing them for years. But
the inside of your head is a scary place, my friend.
I'm sorry. What about that?
Anyway, the artwork.
No, we just tried to offer a lot of things that people had asked about over the years. You know, whether it was getting a lesson with us, which so many people have asked for over the years, and I don't know, they don't show up. I don't know if we scare them off or what, but, you know, we're offering it over Skype. So if anybody wants a bass lesson or a guitar lesson, that's available to you. And when you get that, you help us get our CD done and you help with our promotion, just getting it done.
Yeah.
But
our promotion, our packaging, our mastering, all of
recording.
Those things are costs.
And
defray the cost of all the guests that are on the album.
So the thing that I'm offering from my father is my father illustrated one of the very first books of Frankenstein. And many people have contacted me over the years, and there's been websites put up dedicated just to his artwork on that book. And then it was reissued about 2 years ago by Dover Publishing. And before he passed away, he did a serigraph of one of the paintings that he did. I believe it was a 38-color separation. And he did a limited edition of those, and I know Frankenstein is a very specific audience that likes that, but it's really a beautiful serigraph, and that's offered as one of the premiums for art lovers or people that like the macabre or
on the Pledge Music site. You can see a
people,
picture.
Sci-fi,
fantasy
you can see a picture of it. But I have to interject really. You guys have been posting like little mini lessons and you've been showing on there. And when you were doing your Rosciato, I was scared. That's a scary Rosciato. Man, those hands, I've never heard you play like that. It's like, I'm so used to you playing one note at a time. No, on bass. But I mean, no, it was amazing. Your technique. It's just,
Rosciato's to kill you.
Yeah, but it was awesome. And they've been, and check out their site because they've been showing these little mini lessons. You did one, I think, on on rumbas.
Oh yeah, I
king of the rumbas.
No, I think I had two. I had one that was a rumba lesson one, and then a second rumba lesson two, and then I had a scale sequence.
I saw
thing.
That.
Like, so I think I did three.
Yeah.
So it was interesting, and you did one too. I saw that.
I did like a strat one, but I think for the fundamental rhythms, you know, the scalar stuff that Jim is showing, really, you know, the great intricate finger work that Lise is doing. Mine was strat. It was the Stratocaster, and that was cool. And what I had wanted to delve into, and there just simply hasn't been time, is to get a little bit back behind the mix philosophy and show a little bit of that. So those are still upcoming.
Yeah.
And now that we have like more stuff recorded and it's going to ready to go.
And then we did another lesson showing just sort of breaking down how we wrote Haunted. I was showing my part and he was showing his part, how it went over that.
Yeah.
And just a little bit about the writing process. I mean, you can't do much in 5 minutes, but we were just trying to in on that.
Yeah.
And for Incendio Train Spotters, the cool thing about that particular set of lessons, in addition to whatever you might glean from our guitar playing, is that the namesake of Mambo's Chombo, Mr. Mambo, is featured right behind us, grooving along to our lessons. So it's a little bonus.
There's a little parrot walking around behind him.
Having a good time enjoying himself, so you get that as well.
There you go.
You can find all that on our Incendio page.
Yes.
And our YouTube channel.
Exactly. What you go to is look on the official Incendio Facebook page. It's far too long, but that's how it worked out. And so you go on there, and all of those things are listed. The lessons are listed. Clips going back as far as 2003, 2004. We even have some
earlier
clips
that
are posted. Yeah,
videos of you guys playing all sorts of festivals.
I've been collecting Hendrix tapes since I was 13. Now you can get everything. It didn't used to be that way. So I have a penchant for collecting and recording and documenting all this stuff. And it was kind of like, I have something else now, put it in the file. And so now these files are kind of being opened up and we watch it and it's like, wow, Lisa's hair was that long, or Jim was wearing that particular shirt, or, you know, JP was acting strange, which doesn't narrow it down in any way.
Well, and your hair went from year to year to year to year to year.
Yeah.
So, but one of the things I do want to mention that, it's not always apparent, though you do play guitar, is how amazing Lisa is a guitar player. She studied, too. And I mean, that blew me away. And I forget, because I'm so used to seeing her playing the bass all the time, which she does great. But it's like, yeah, wow.
So it makes her technique very unique on the bass, too.
Yeah, like Abraham Laboriel, who also plays guitar, started as guitarist and bass player and is my fave bass player from all time.
Yes, I was lucky to work with him on one session, and oh, nice. I was telling JP last night I wasn't the producer, so they wouldn't let me record it. If I had the money to buy the reel at the time, I would have done it. But he and Alex Acuna were warming up, and it was priceless. That's all I can tell you. I can't show it to you, but man, he one of the sweetest people ever.
Yeah.
Yes, I used to see them play at the Baked Potato all the time when he was with Konania.
Yes.
Amazing.
A man of faith and a lovely guy.
Yeah, very nice. Now, let's take a look real quick. We're getting almost out of time, and I still got another clip to play, or two, or whatever. But these are the guitars these are one of the things that you're offering. Mm-hmm. So you go first.
All right. All right, so this is a guitar that I used actually on the Incendio Christmas album and also on my last solo album. It's a 2015 Pedro Maldonado, and it is, you know, mint condition. It doesn't have a pickup in it. Spanish cypress back and sides and a German spruce top, and I think we're offering it for $5,000. And I paid $8,000 for this guitar. So
it's a beautiful guitar, and it's really loud.
You know what? Because it doesn't have a pickup in it, I haven't seen it before, and the rosette and the work, in addition to it sounding beautiful, are gorgeous. Yeah, so. I hadn't seen this before.
Yeah, the binding
really
is nice.
To get Maldonados now, and this one you don't have to have shipped in from Spain. It's right here.
Yeah, I mean, if like I said, they take 5-6 months to be built, and you're looking at $7,000 to $9,000, and like the only reason I'm actually getting rid of it is I have a lot of Spanish guitars, and I have a 2001 Maldonado, which I love, and I've had that one for 17 years. So,
is that an acoustic? Because I know you need for live performance.
Has a pickup in it.
Yeah.
Half of my nylon strings don't have pickups, and half do. This one doesn't have a pickup. So I mean, it's like, you know, if somebody wanted to buy it and just as a collector.
I wouldn't put a pickup in it.
And just use it as I use it as a studio only guitar.
Yeah.
So that's this guitar.
So it sounds like a Canon.
Yeah.
Just a couple of notes, a chord or something like that, so they hear. That's pretty loud. It's not even near the mic.
And these are just light gauge strings. So if somebody put heavy gauge strings on here.
The sustain is amazing.
It's really good. It's very bright, which is, you know, what you'd expect from a Flamenca Blanca.
Yeah. You know? No, that's a beautiful guitar. Yeah.
So that's this guitar.
Now, what do you have?
I have a mid-70s student Ramirez that Lisa's had for years. She actually knows more about it than I do, to be honest with you. Only so far as the pedigree of it.
Well, it's a student model, like you said. It's a student model Ramirez, which means that it wasn't made by the family, but it was made with the blessings of the family, with a lot of people that made them for Ramirez.
That was in Spain, though.
Yeah, yes, it was made in Spain.
Because I don't think Ramirez now, it's different than it was, right?
Probably. Yes, yes. But there were a lot of makers that the Ramirez family would say, go ahead and make a student model to our specs. And this is one of these. And I played it all through college. I did a lot of my college recitals on it. We played it on
Mysterioso and Illumination.
And Illumination, and perhaps some of the others. And it's not a cutaway. It's got no
pickup
in it.
Back then, there were no cutaways.
And it's just, you know, it's a really lovely beginner's guitar. It's got a very warm sound to it.
Beginner's classical.
Beginner's classical guitar.
Yeah, it's a classical. That was like the guitar when I was in school at SC. Yeah. That was like, if you didn't have a Ramirez, you were not cool. And, of course, I didn't have a Ramirez, so.
So you weren't cool.
I was never cool. Got a nice sound to it.
Yeah, it's got a really warm sound to it.
And that's all solid, right? That's cedar with, was that rosewood back there or is that mahogany?
I think it's mahogany.
Show the guitar, flip it, and show it on the camera. It looks like rosewood.
The neck is probably mahogany,
right.
And the back and sides are probably rosewood.
Yeah, but that's solid, if I'm correct.
What do you mean solid?
Solid wood. It's not laminate. Like,
oh, no, no.
Yeah, no, but it would still be rosewood.
Yeah, yeah, but it's a solid, which is more value.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. And so there's that.
What are we offering that for? I don't remember.
I don't remember either. No, we changed the prices. I'll check. I don't remember about this last one.
So this is another interesting one, too. So
and
tell us about this.
This is a Kenny Hill guitar. This is my guitar. But we're offering one just like it. This one has a pickup in it. The one we're offering does not have a pickup in it. It is also a cutaway. I can't tell you the wood and everything. I don't know. Maybe Jim remembers.
I think it's that one is a Indian rosewood back and sides, and the top is cedar.
Yeah. Is that rosewood? That looks like walnut.
No. The top is a cedar top, and the back and sides are rosewood.
And I think that's the one that we're offering, too, is similar to this.
Yeah, and it's a classical guitar.
But it's a cutaway, and it's
it's deeper.
It's got a warmer sound than Jim's, obviously. It's not as
loud. Yeah, the flamenco guitar is kind of...
But it's nice. It's very warm, and I've had this one for about 6 months, and I love it. It works very well live. The pickup, I don't know, what kind of pickup do I have? I don't even remember
it's
what
it is. It's a Barbera.
Yours is
Barbera, that's right.
I know more about their guitars.
I know, I don't remember. But it sounds great live. It sounds great recording, and we're offering that as a premium, too. And
so
I think we're offering it for...
The Ramirez Classical is $700. The Kenny Hill is $1,500. And Jim's guitar
is
$5,000.
Yes.
Yeah. Those are good. That's a good price.
Yeah.
I mean, Ramirez's were... Back then, were $700 for those.
Yeah,
they weren't cheap, even for the student ones. They were not that cheap, and so that's actually a good deal.
And the nice thing about the student model is that it doesn't have that gigantic neck that traditional Ramirez have that so many people really don't enjoy.
Yeah,
because it was made for Segovia, and a lot of people don't have those type of hands. So for the smaller model, it's easier to play.
Yeah.
It's 845. You want to hit one of the Poderosa, maybe?
Yeah, I'm going to play Poderosa. This is Jim's tune.
This is one of my songs, and yeah.
Featuring him and the MX4, which is now standard on DP. Thank you, DP, for doing that.
Okay, let's go ahead and play it, and then you can tell me a little bit about what you're doing, because there's a lot of interesting things happening on this one, too.
Oh, yeah.
Poderosa. Now, that's a very cool thing. Now, there's your – you were talking before about the adding new – you know, taking the rhythm and enhancing it and make it – is that one of the examples where you're making it more techno?
With the yeah, I mean, that's kind of the loop going. And then JP played the I think he borrowed your guitar.
My Gretsch.
Your Gretsch.
Yes, I love the
spaghetti,
bar.
The spaghetti Western guitar stuff.
Yeah. And we replicate that on stage now with the Strat. It's cool. It's not quite the same. There's the Filtertron and that. I believe we're using it.
Well, you're just going to have to get a Tele with Filtertrons on it.
Yeah, the Cabronita kind of style stuff. But yours is a Tennessean or Chet Atkins?
It's a Nashville. It's a Chet Atkins.
Chet Atkins Nashville's, right.
It's an old 60s
that's
one.
Filtertrons and that. And that is actually through the Motu plugin. So that's not guitar rig. It's not bias, which I've been using on stage. It's actually comes with Motu as a setup. It's like a compressor, clean, a reverb tank.
Now, when the album comes out, we're going to have them back, obviously, and we're going to go into much more detail. But you can understand here, and also too, this clip, you can hear there's like instrumental little things going on where I think you're going to be overdubbing, and this is not finished yet. But it's interesting because you can hear some really cool stuff. And I thought the whammy bar stuff, those little strums are
very
cool.
I think there's still some harmonies that have to go on there. But, you know, everything's work in progress, yeah.
Yeah. No, but I mean, it's interesting to hear it because wait until you hear the final product.
And I think you have the lead and then you have something that adds character, whether it's an electric piano or an organ or horns or whatever. And definitely the character in that is the spaghetti Western guitar.
Yeah, and you still have to overdub the tuba solo. No, I'm just kidding.
Whenever you're ready, man.
But
yeah, we haven't had a tuba yet. I guess we'll have to write that into.
No, I actually had somebody that did a guitar with solo tuba. Unbelievable. It really worked. blew me away.
So two former guests are on my texting me that are watching the feed right now.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Sistos and
yes.
Eric Hansen.
Hello, Mr. Sistos.
Hey, guys.
Hello, Mr. Hansen.
Mr. Sistos.
Yes, you guys need to come back and do another show. You're overdue. I'm just going to say that. So, but anyway, we're almost out of time. I'm going to save this. Actually, was a clip. It's a shorter clip. I'll end it with this song. I think it's called First Hill.
First Hill is the hardest. Just First Hill.
Nothing to do with Silent Hill. No.
I like that movie.
Yes. But anyway, before you explain that one, first of all, www.pledgemusic.com/projects/incendio2018.
Correct. Yes.
And that's where you can go and take a look at all the guitars and, help them out, be part of it. It's very, I think that's very important because you show your support, but also it's part of what's happening now where there are no real record labels or very few. Now it's you and the artist directly interacting.
That is
I think that's the
idea.
So that, and then now, just tell us brief. One other thing, congratulations. Tell me, I don't know the name of the award.
Oh, yeah.
You won something for Guitar Mystique.
Oh, One World Music UK. They have a contest every year for all the stuff that gets played on their station in Europe, and so I got. What is it? Best acoustic record for 2017.
Very cool.
Yeah.
And
cool.
A shout out to Bo.
Shout out to Mr. Astrup.
And Dan and and Steven,
Novi,
Eric, who all played on the record.
Novi
and Novi. Yeah.
Yes. And also too. Now, where are you guys playing? What's going on with you guys?
We're playing all summer. This weekend we are at Fremont, the Mission Coffee House, the Brass Concert Music Series, and then Sunday at 1:30, I believe, at the Novato Art and Wine Festival. Then we're about 2 weeks after that. We're doing a week in Chicago and Lake Geneva, the Studio Winery in Lake Geneva, on Friday the 22nd. Logan Square Art Festival on the 23rd. Deerfield Summer Concerts on the 24th, I believe. Then after that, we'll be at the Levitt Pavilion in Denver. We'll be doing Albuquerque. We'll be playing Colorado Springs, smack in the middle of that run, which is in the middle of July. We come back to LA to play with our good friends, The Lautheiser Band opened for them at the Palmdale Amphitheater, and that'll have Kieli Minucci on guitar, Eric Marienthal on sax, Karen Briggs on violin, and a guy who very graciously is doing tracks for us as we speak, Munyango Jackson, who has played with Miles and Sting and Stevie Wonder and is such a great heart, just a lovely guy. And he's doing percussion right now and doing a lovely job. So.
And what's the target to have the album out?
October, right?
I was going to say like 2025, but to be more practical, yes, fall, September, October.
Well, we're hoping to have it available at least for bandstand sales over the summer, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah. Okay. Because if it's in October,
for official release,
you're going to have to come, and we're going to have to go through the whole album and really get into it. So
that would be awesome. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, thanks
as
for
always,
having us,
my friend. And just real quick, so check incendioband.com out for updates and dates and all that kind of stuff, including East Coast shows. I haven't gotten to Reston and returning to Long Island, but
they're all there on our website, so you can find all of our.
So incendioband.com, and what's your Facebook page?
The official Incendio Facebook page. That's the whole thing. You can find that on there. And we're posting videos from all eras of the band there on Instagram at instagram.com/incendioband and twitter.com/incendioband. We're posting little – and youtube.com/incendioband. All of those – eventually all of them wind up. They start on Facebook and then we migrate them over to YouTube.
Yeah.
So you can view them in whatever medium you desire. There's quite a bunch of stuff on there. You know, really early footage of the band, Jim jamming out on like Espiritu and things we don't play as much these days anymore. Lisa Carbe playing with Lindsay
and Janet.
And we have some other fun clips coming out of that. And for the truly demented, we have a clip of me playing with my delightful college band, the John Belushi Memorial Blues Band, back in 1980.
I remember them.
Playing my Gibson mini humbucker.
Which he totally rocks on. He grooved then as hard as he grooves now.
Yes.
I had less facial hair.
But you needed to get your hair, like, up. You never did do the 80s hair thing.
Oh, I did. I have a picture of you with me with the tall hair, and it's awful. And I did everything I could to find it before I came, and I couldn't find it. But it is there. I look like...
I don't remember. That's how much I tuned in.
I look like Kid and Play. Obscure hip hop reference.
I love it. He had a picture of me at St. Paul's with Michael Mason.
Yeah, go check out Facebook.
That was pretty funny. Okay, I'm going to end. This is actually a short clip, but it's called First Hill, so kind of set it up a little bit.
This is one that I wrote. Jim did Poderosa. Lisa was mostly Don't Pretend. And for me, I wanted to kind of evoke, we go and play in Connecticut a lot, Westport, Connecticut, at the Levitt Pavilion out there, and spend a lot of time between there and upstate New York and New York City, and just the vibe between Westport and New York City. There's something very special about the landscape there. So I try to evoke that with this song, and it's a little more mellow, and it's just kind of a mellow meditation on that area and Ridgefield, the great area that Lee's come from.
Now, on this rough mix, I know that you're, again, this is another early one. What are you playing on this?
I'm playing guitar. Lee's playing bass. Jim and I are doing...
But what guitars?
On the intro is the Godin and the Strat underneath. The Maldonado is the main guitar on doing the melody, I think. Yeah.
And I think at the beginning of this, there's a really cool bass line.
Yeah.
She opens with this bass, Doug. And also thanks, Doug, for being here. Doug Moore, but you're going to love this bass line.
Oh, and I'm playing MTD.
MTD, mm-hmm. Michael Tobias Design of Basses. And Michael, we'll see you in Jamaica, New York. In a Jamaica, where are we?
All right, everybody.
Kingston. Oh, my Kingston. God. How embarrassing. Kingston.
So www.pledgemusic.com/projects/incendio2018. Not 2025 as JP. 2018. But check it out and... you know, pre-order the disc and you get the digital download and it's going to be autographed and all that stuff. But check out some of the other stuff if you can afford it. It's great. They got some great stuff. That Ramirez is a buy. And so all of these guitars are great. And the artwork, there's some really cool things that they're offering. And it's for a good cause to get that whole thing together. So anyway, Everybody have a great week. This is going to be a quick ending because I think this is only about a minute of this clip. But this is Fast Hill. And again,
it's a fast first hill.
There you go. You know, I'm going to the eye doctor this week to get my glasses fixed because it says first hill here and I can't read it. All right. Everybody have a great weekend. We will see you next week. And thank you, guys. It's so good to always have you come on and visit with us.
Thanks, Jeff.
And I'll take all three of those guitars right now. Okay, here we go. Everybody have a good night.